You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host for today, Jackson Phil, Philip Preuss, because Chris is not with me. It's like we're getting him once every 2 weeks or something like that as his time winds down here at Locked On Jaguars. But glad to have Phil here bringing you Philip Friday, everyone's favorite segment. Phil, as always, welcome.
Is it everyone's favorite segment?
I mean, like literally after the first one, we had a brand new 5-star review saying I absolutely love Philip Friday. So
I'm glad you got my review.
Boy, if you didn't review this show when I first started it with a 5-star, you're dead to me.
I don't think I did.
Oh my god.
Maybe right. I made burner accounts.
I don't know.
I mean,
I'm here now.
That would cost money, wouldn't it? A burner account on iTunes?
I don't know. Ask Dave Caldwell.
Yeah. All right, let's get to today's show. The draft is 2 weeks away from the time we're recording this, 2 weeks and 2 hours. So we're really starting to zone in on, you know, what the Jaguars are going to do. And by that, we mean we really have no idea, which is how this thing works. So what we've decided to do, this is a fun little segment. Phil and I have put together a top 15 big board for the Jaguars based on, you know, at least for me, I don't know Phil's and Phil doesn't know mine. So we're reading it one by one, ranking by ranking to, you know, surprise each other and give you guys our ideas to what we think their board looks like. But this goes from like top prospect in the draft and down in case anyone were to fall. That's how a big board obviously will work. I based mine on, you know, I didn't weigh it out, like calculate where each player should land, but I kept in mind what I saw on tape combined with what the Jaguars seemingly like at their respective positions of the guys on this. As well as obviously noted interest that they had for some guys. And just, you know, those are types of things that we'll talk about. There's going to be a lot of different factors as to why certain guys are ranked on our boards. But keep in mind, this isn't necessarily me or Phillip's big board, but this is what we're projecting the Jaguars to look like. So we'll go ahead and start it off. I'll be batting first, and I'm going with Quinnen Williams, interior defensive lineman out of Alabama. I mean, dude's a freaking home wrecker for an interior defensive lineman. Quite honestly, you could probably move him to one tech if you needed to in a pinch, like former Alabama defensive lineman and current Jaguars nose tackle Marcell Dareus has done. He started off as a 3-tech, moved to 1-0 tech. You also could probably, over time, put Quinnen a bit outside and make him a bit of a chess piece. And, I mean, what's his weakness? That he was a one-year starter? It's hard to find. I mean, like we talk about Dwayne Haskins and how much we love him, and like that's his weakness for us is that the 1 year starter thing. But I don't weigh that as much as a lot of other people do. And Williams is just about as much of a home run as you can get in this draft. And with that, I'll lead it over to Phil. Who you got at number one?
The weakness with Williams is he wears braces. That's the only weakness.
I mean, like, a year or so, he's going to have real straight teeth, and it's going to be a strong point.
Yeah, that's going to get knocked out by Quinnen Williams. I got Nick Bosa number one. I think they would like, it seems like they want to really prioritize the edge. I think that would be the top of their board.
I'm assuming that we flip-flop for our number two then, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
Probably. Mean, yep, I got Quinnen in his two.
I've got Nick as two, and I mean, you really could go either way there when it's all said and done, because like I said about Williams, I think Bosa's a home run. And in fairness, you know, edge probably is a bigger need than interior defensive line at this point in terms of the role and amount of snaps it'd play right out the gate. So it's easy to see it one way or another. And I'm going to assume you don't have a ton of offensive players in your top 10, because I don't. I've got three out of the 10, so you're going to hear
I've
a lot
got
of
three.
You, oh, wow. I wonder if we have the same. I'm sure. I don't know if we'll have totally the same, but we're going to keep a lot of defense rolling. And my number three is Montez Sweat.
So is mine.
Boom.
There it is. Good player. I hope he's that high on their board.
He's a good player. He plays with a lot of speed and burst, which is clearly something they like, as you can see by the Taven pick last year. He's a guy with the prototypical size to come in and play their big end spot. You know, he's a two-way player in the run game as a pass rusher. I think if it's not someone named Quinnen Williams or Nick Bosa, that Montez Sweat is the best option if they go defense. I'm not an advocate of them going defense. I've made this really, really clear for a long time now. But as we've gotten closer, I've opened my mind to the idea of what if they do, who would I target at that point? And I don't think Williams or Bosa would be there. Sweat has a chance of being there if he's not taken at like six by the Giants. I love that fit. I do. I mean, just looking at it from that perspective, I love that fit.
Yeah, and watch Oakland as a dark horse sneaky team for Sweat. They got to coach him hands-on at the Senior Bowl. Gruden got his hands on him. Their scouts met with him at the Senior Bowl, which is kind of rare when you actually have, you know, eyes on the player with the coaching staff to have right. The scouting, you know, staff to also meet with him privately. They also met with him at the combine. So why are you meeting with him at the combine when you've already gotten a chance to coach him for an entire week and have your scouts meet with him during the Senior Bowl? And they brought him in for another private visit. So the interest is definitely there. And there's no doubt that Oakland's biggest need is to replace Khalil Mack at that defensive end spot. So I would also kind of earmark the Raiders as kind of a sneaky left field dark horse pick for Montez Sweat.
We move on to our number four. And I know Phil won't like this, and I don't like it, but it's hard for me to see a scenario right now where Jawan Taylor isn't in their top five, and I've got him at four. I contemplated putting another defensive player or two here, but, I mean, I fully believe that they love Jawan Taylor and his 3 years of experience with no – seemingly no injury history when playing, but now there apparently are red flags popping up throughout his draft process. That might scare him off a bit. But at the end of the day, they're going to see a dude who comes in and excels at run blocking at a huge, huge, to them at least, position of need, the right side of the offensive line. I'd still deem it to be guard more of a need than tackle, but I digress. From Florida. Got to weigh in how much they love those Florida boys. So he's actually not even the only Florida boy in my top 15 here for their big board, but I'll get to that later. Phil, you have to hate it. We'll get to it later. You have to hate it. I'm sure you hate.
You just hate to see it.
You hate to see it. I'm not feeling the love on Jawan Taylor. I put out my report on him. I guess I'd understand the idea of them going offensive line at seven, even though I do prefer either Jonah Williams or a round two guy. But if that's what they're viewing as the best way to protect their quarterback that they just invested $88 million into, then I'd be disappointed, but so be it at the same time. Who do you have there?
I got Josh Allen. I think they think he's special. I think they think that he could be another kind of Dante Fowler guy on the third down packages and really develop as a pass rusher. And they could do some fun things with him, especially with Dom Capers in there now, right? To maybe sprinkle in some multiple looks with some 3-4 looks with Jan and Josh Allen and do some of that fun stuff. So they met with him at the combine. They brought him in for an official visit, I think yesterday, right? Or today.
I think it was yesterday. Yeah.
Yep. And so the interest is obviously there. I doubt he'll be there anyway at seven, but I think he would be next on their board.
I've got him at five. You said that they could provide the versatility. I'll also believe that when I see it. I'm sure that's why they brought in Capers for blitz packaging and stuff, but at the end of the day, they've needed to be more versatile with their defense since they actually became good, and we haven't seen that, and that's something that largely impacted what made this defense not look too great this past year. So if they do it, that's great. And if so, I think Allen becomes a really intriguing pick at that point. I've got him pegged at five.
Nice. My number five, Devin White. A little bit kind of left field, right? To take an inside linebacker.
A little bit out of left field, but it's not too far out of left field compared to my number 11.
Okay. Very good. Devin White is a special player. I think the team addressed, you know, linebacker a little bit with Jake Ryan for the immediate, but I think I don't know how much of a future Telvin Smith has after this year. It wouldn't shock me if a guy like Devin White fell and all those other guys ahead of him were also off the board, right? To just go ahead, take Devin White, and then maybe try to move Telvin Smith to a team like Carolina, who lost Thomas Davis, you know, moved on from Thomas Davis after a long, long time at weak side linebacker, have 2 third-round picks, maybe recoup another pick for Telvin later in the draft. Because it seems to me that the writing is on the wall, that the eventual succession plan is to move Miles Jack over to weak side linebacker and essentially give him Telvin's contract as his, you know, rookie deal expires here. So, you know, a linebacker pairing of Devin White and Miles Jack would definitely keep the ball rolling on the defense. And they seem to like those LSU guys just fine.
They do seem to like those LSU guys just fine. My issue with White is tackling after what was an awful, awful year of tackling by their linebacking core. But I'll talk about linebackers a little bit more in just a little bit once we get to my guy. Number six, got Brian Burns, a guy that reminds me a lot of the role of Yannick Ngakoue as the speed rusher on the weak side, a guy that's really bendy, a guy that counters well, that he plays small, who cares? Like, he's still incredibly effective. You draft him with the intentions of not paying Yannick Ngakoue unless he is willing to not take franchise pass rushing money, which would be blasphemy if they even offered him not pass, like, franchise pass rushing money. He deserves it at this point. Do it. But I think if that's going to be their plan, if that's what they want to do, Burns fits that mold. You definitely develop him behind Yannick if Yannick's willing. I'm not entirely sure if Yannick would be willing, as he's a chip on his shoulder guy who really believes in himself. Not to call him cocky, but at the end of the day, we saw a lot of frustration with him and the whole Taven Bryan fiasco last year throughout the year. So it'd be an interesting match to bring him in and put him behind Yannick and essentially let Yannick know we're not paying you, right?
Zach, it's Yannick, first of all. And
Yannick
second
sounds
of all,
cool. I like Yannick. It's easier to say.
That's just disrespectful.
It rolls off the tongue better. Yannick. It's like I've like forced my throat into it, I don't know.
All right, I'll just start calling you Zach.
I'm so used to that. You got to get better. Come on.
Okay. Well, I will get better.
Get better every day.
I will get better with number six, and number six is Dwayne Haskins.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that has Dwayne in the top 10.
Look,
I'm hinting way too much. I need to stop doing that.
Yeah, you sure do. Look, Nick Foles are not in the picture. I think they have a really high grade on him. I think so much is evident in how many times they went out to see him, scout him, talk to him. I didn't see a report about him visiting.
No.
I don't,
no quarterbacks,
right?
No quarterbacks have yet.
And that actually makes me like this more, that he's not visiting. Because if they did all that homework and research on him already and they talked to him, if Tom talked to him at the combine, which they did, right? They had that session, whiteboard and everything. Then they don't need to tip off their hand anymore that they like him, especially since it seemed that a little bit of that reporting got out early. Remember that? Before we really got into the crux of everything. So I don't think that signing Nick Foles just makes them magically not like Dwayne Haskins as a prospect anymore, if that makes sense. So this number six on the big board kind of sparks my quote-unquote next tier, right? So 1 through 5, those guys that would be taken on my board would purely be taken out of just because they're blue chip talent, kind of. So everything from here on out, I think, is where they would start to entertain potential offers to trade down, because it's kind of a clump of players, and there's a good chance that that clump of players will be available, and we'll talk about that more on the next segment. But Dwayne's my number six.
Dwayne, since I already said it, is on my list. He's not at number six, or seven, I guess, now for that matter. Number seven, to me, is a pure explosive defensive playmaker who likes to stand on horses, and his name is Ed Oliver. Is he the biggest defensive tackle that we've ever seen? No. Is he the lengthiest? No. Are these things that the Jaguars seem to like out of their defensive tackles? Yes. Do I care? Absolutely not. The dude is going to be a beast. The dude is just insanely, you know, athletic. This is stuff that you already know. I think people are overthinking him at this point. He's probably going to slide based on what reports indicate, and I think teams are making a mistake. Got him sliding in there at 7. I don't, like I've said about, I mean, unless it's Quinnen, I think if they're targeting a 3-tech, then you're essentially saying, yeah, we messed up on Taven Bryan because he's supposed to be the starting 3-tech at this point. If they want to do that, that's fine. That makes them look really bad in crunch time, but whatever. Which makes me think they're not going to do it unless it's someone like Quinnen.
Yeah, so full disclosure, Ed Oliver would have been number 4 on my personal big board. But since we're trying to do this from the Jaguars frame of reference, I do not have him at number 7. My number 7 is Jonah Williams. Yeah, before Juwan Taylor, I have Jonah Williams. So I got a little nugget from my R&D guy at Kevin from Duval. He was listening to Tony Pauline's podcast today. And Jonah Williams is very, very coveted in by teams in the top 10, starting with the Jets. The Jets would love to trade down. That's kind of the guy they seem to be liking in a trade down scenario is Jonah Williams. They think he's a left tackle. The Bills like Jonah Williams as a left tackle, potentially move Deion Dawkins over to right tackle up in Buffalo. Green Bay likes Jonah Williams. So there's a lot of interest still from teams, you know, picking in that area. And Tony Pauline even reported that the Jaguars had interest in Jonah Williams. Remember? That's when what sparked all the investigation on my part with the relationship with Brent Key. And I'm going to stick with that relationship with Brent Key and Doug Marrone for Jonah Williams. I think he's more of a lunch pail guy. I think they would like and prefer his versatility to potentially kick inside to guard. He had freshman experience as right tackle. We already talked about this in a previous episode. But Jonah Williams is my number 7 guy before Juwan Taylor. I think they would go that route.
We move on to number 8. I don't need to explain much. TJ Hawkinson's my guy for the Jaguars if it's not Dwayne Haskins. Everyone and their mother knows that. I bumped him down from guys like Ed because of, you know, everyone, the whole idea of tight ends and their worth. Whatever. TJ Hawkinson's going to be a stud. And I think that he'd come along in this offense a lot quicker than people give a tight end credit for as a rookie because of his floor and because of the high usage of tight ends that Nick Foles has shown in the past. We saw it with Dallas Goedert last year, even as a backup. Like, he put up, at the very worst, mid-tier starting tight end production as a rookie with Nick Foles playing a lot of quarterback with him. So I think 8's probably fair, which means if they're a best available player type of team, he wouldn't be here. But at the end of the day,
bless, he
still
you,
makes
Shannon.
Top 10. Yeah, my girlfriend's here in the background. If you guys were wondering what that sneeze was,
Juwan Taylor for me, number 8. I think he's right after Jonah. So if Jonah were to be gone, then I think he would be next on the list. And then I'll just go straight on to number 9 because we talked about him a little bit. That would be Ed Oliver at that point.
And we already talked about my number 9. Definitely have him as a top 10 guy, especially with the interest that we've reported here, we've confirmed here, we've been watching since October is Dwayne Haskins at quarterback, and I love the Aaron Rodgers idea, so it naturally will never happen. Number 10. Another guy that reminds you of Taven Bryan in a sense that he's got all the athletic ability in the world and he has absolutely no idea how to use it, which makes him a Jaguars favorite, and that is Rashawn Gary, edge out of Michigan.
Hey, that's my number 10.
Hey, so we can go ahead and move on.
Yep.
Number 11, and I knocked him down a lot because of his length, but you nailed it perfectly otherwise as to why he deserves to be on this top 15 board, and it's Jonah Williams. I'm not sure how highly they value guards because at the end of the day, they've drafted 6 offensive linemen and passed on what looked to be a stud of one for a backup defensive tackle last year at 29th overall. So I don't know how much they love it as a top 10 pick for that matter. So that might knock Williams down a little bit for them. His length to play tackle definitely knocks him down considering their thresholds. But every other point you've made to the, like, if they were saying, you know what, like, best available player to improve this offense, I like Williams the player a lot more than I like Jawan Taylor, the player. So, and yep. the relationship you've mentioned with Brent Key and his versatility, playing with Cam Robinson, like there's a lot of ties to Jonah Williams, and the Tony Pauline report, if that's definitely accurate, is like the cherry on top. So yep. I pray it's Jonah over Jawan if they're going offensive line.
Yep, totally valid. Very good. Next, number 11 on my list is Brian Burns, and we already talked about Burns. I like Brian Burns a lot. I would have him a lot higher personally if it was my big board, but I think he would be next on theirs.
Number 12. I had done some shuffling, actually, so he got pushed to 12 from 11, what I hinted at earlier. Devin Bush Jr.
Bush.
Michigan.
Wow.
They don't seem to care about size at linebacker as much, whether it's weight with Telvin Smith, whether it's length with Miles Jack. And so, yeah, Bush might be a little undersized, but I don't know if they care about that much. He's a guy that can play zone. He's a dude that, unlike Devin White, is a legit tackler. He's a physical tackler. If they're willing to improve their linebacker core as things stand, I bet they're going to emphasize tackling, because I think Telvin was like top three or top five. There was some stat from PFF where Telvin was just so miserable as a tackler in 2018, and how bad he was overshadowed how bad Miles Jack was as a tackler in 2018. I'm sure that that's going to be a huge part of their evaluation, looking at tacklers at linebackers at this point, and really maybe every position on defense is how a guy finishes.
It's an interesting argument. I wasn't expecting it, and he's not in my top 15. And the reason for that is I think if they are going to try this succession plan with moving Miles Jack to weak side linebacker, it would be because what you kind of mentioned with Telvin's, you know, tackling being a little bit spotty, and they would probably want a true brute middle linebacker, someone that could be a little bit bigger and take on blocks. That's why I would probably not think that Devin Bush would be very high on their board, but I could be wrong. My number, what are we on, 12 player would be TJ Hockenson.
And my one thing before you explain your take on Hockenson is that I do believe Bush can, you know, move around as a linebacker. And while he might not be a true middle, you know, they mentioned that they love versatility in the past. They do. They mentioned that on defense, specifically at safety recently. The guys that are playing in the middle of the field. Yeah, it's some different responsibilities with keying and everything like that and playing the run game. But they signed Barry Church so they could, you know, not just run so much cover three and have, even when they were, interchange their safeties. Like, be able to hold both accountable for the same responsibilities. So maybe they like that idea of having interchangeable linebackers between Miles and Bush at that point, and you can push Bush that rhymed to Will and Miles to Mike and flip, you know, both around at the same time, because they do enjoy that versatility. Doug Marrone is Miles Jack's biggest fan in the world, and the arrow is pointing for him to play Will, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they try and find ways to incorporate him as the middle linebacker in a lot of sets as well.
Next pick, Noah Fant. If Hockenson's gone, I think they would like Fant.
I don't. I don't think he's going to be in their top 15.
Wow.
I think that he would be an elite passing game weapon, but blocking is so important to them, and I think he's a great blocker in space. They converted before ASJ did anything last year, which, quite frankly, he did nothing last year. But before there was any incorporation with him in the pass game, even watching him in training camp, you know, they were working him hard as an inline blocker. He did really well, I thought, coming in early and learning how to do that, because that wasn't a strength of his too much before. And Hockenson, I think, is a stud at that. I don't see that with Fant just yet. Could he mold into that? Absolutely. And he's got the ability out in space that makes you think he probably could. But considering that's not there right now, I push him down a little bit in comparison to Hockenson.
Yeah, Fant's not a dominant blocker, but he's an enthusiastic blocker, and he has the attitude to work on it. And he is a lot bigger than I thought he was when he checked in at the combine. So between those two things, I think he could work on it. And I also don't think this is going to be the same offense that you've seen the last few years. And I don't think they're going to be running their head against the wall with inline blocking tight ends. I think they're going to try a lot of different stuff. And Noah Fant definitely gives them that versatility. And I think John DeFilippo would love a premier pass catching option from the position. People forget that Zach Ertz isn't the greatest blocker in Philadelphia. He's not in line all the time. So that would basically be the way that I envision them using Noah Fant. And I think that they would be big on him, and they brought him in for a visit, so at least there's some interest.
Wait, where'd you see that?
Somewhere. Oh, I have it on my sheet.
Can you link me that? Because I gotta update my tracker. You're not gonna like my next two. At all.
Of course I'm not.
Yeah, because you don't like me. Number 13, DK Metcalf. I am personally not the biggest fan of DK Metcalf as a whole receiver prospect, but you just mentioned how you think that they want to change things on offense. I would expect them, if they change things, to try and make things a little more vertical, have a guy that they'd really trust to be competitive as a boundary guy, more of an 80-20 receiver than a 50-50. And I think Metcalf, you know, from his physical profile and what he's shown he can do, he fits that mold to a T and is someone that's going to be really, really great at that at the next level. If they're not changing their offense and they're trying to run a ton of West Coast things still and, you know, make everyone a possession receiver, Metcalf is totally off the board. But we've both talked about the idea of needing to add someone of that caliber to be the guy outside, to play a lot more vertically, someone that they can trust just throw the ball up to that they've missed since Allen Robinson was healthy and had his career season in 2015. And there's a thing that Tom Coughlin appears to like because it's been the new type since he came in, and it's tall, freakishly athletic, and physical profile receivers. And Metcalf fits that. He's not the most, you know, agile as a guy that can turn, but just about everything that Tom seems to like, you know, the straight line speed, the physicality, and the size is there.
For me, there's no freaking way that I'm redrafting DJ Chark with the top 7 pick, and that's essentially what I see DK Metcalf as being. I don't DeFilippo's route tree involves a lot of agility and stuff inside. I think DJ Chark has that. DK Metcalf does not. And from everything that the conversations I've had in the past few days, Haskins isn't the only one that seems to be slipping. Don't be surprised if Metcalf falls all the way to the tail end of the first round. There's a lot of concern there. So my number 14 guy, Dexter Lawrence, not the best pick, but then again, we're down to 14, right? So if they stay put, this is all a wash at number 7. But I think they would be high on Dexter Lawrence's ability to plug and be an eventual Marcel Darius replacement. And I'll just go straight to my number 15. I think that'll be Jeff Simmons.
Wait, you're already on 15?
Yeah. That was my 14 and 15.
I've got two left. I got 14 and 15 as well. But hit me with Jeffrey Simmons real quick.
Jeff Simmons, I think they wouldn't have an issue with his domestic violence. That was early in his career. He was a very young kid. It seems that was pretty much diagnosed as just momentary lapse of judgment. It seems like he's taken a lot of steps to rectify that. The ACL is not ideal, right? Because he just tore his ACL in training. However, the way that this team is set up, they probably wouldn't need a ton of production right off the bat early in the year, but if he can come back and midway through the season and be a part of that rotation again, he's a monster player. I mean, he's a top 10 talent on film. He's a disruptor, he's a pocket collapser, and I think he could play either tackle spot if he had to, and he's a player I think that they are pretty high on as well.
My 14th player is another Gator that I mentioned. Can you guess who it is?
I hope it's not Ja'Kai, and I hope it's not Chauncey Gardner.
It's not Ja'Kai.
It's Chauncey Gardner?
For the exact reasons I mentioned earlier is that, this is just obviously a little fun thing, is that they love Gators. The legitimate scenario to it is, like I mentioned earlier, the versatility that they love out of their safeties. A guy that really broke out you know, this past year had shown some inconsistencies before, but broke out the past year. And, you know, Ronnie Harrison's a guy that came in, and we love the idea that, you know, he's a powerful tackler. We see some of those same things coming out of Chauncey, so we know that he can, you know, come on down and play that role as well. He's a guy that is versatile enough to play some safety and play some nickel. DJ Hayden's contract, you know, they can get out of it next. They can get out of it this year, but they can also get out of it, obviously, at this point. That means next year. You have a guy that, you know, you can move around. He's got plenty of experience. He's a guy that can go and play the ball really well, get cheaper, younger on the back end. Quite frankly, adding depth as a whole with the versatility that he'd provide. And then number 15, you're going to have to help me pronounce it, Clelin Ferrell from Clemson, to come in and be a lesser version of Montez Sweat as a big end. Not as explosive as an athlete, but a guy that can come in, really set the edge against the run, develop more as a pass rusher, but he's got great size. I think he can come in and be a one-gapping 4-3 strong side.
Yep, Ferrell was the guy that I was kind of on the fence with at 15, kind of going back and forth with Jeff Simmons. So Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, huh?
Wow. Intriguing, isn't it? You have to factor like a Gator bias here. Like, I mean, history indicates that.
I think they would, if they're going to go for a versatile safety, I think they would much prefer a guy like Nasir Adderley out of Delaware.
I bet
who also played cornerback and safety and did all those things you described.
That makes sense too. I mean, really, I like Adderley as well.
I also think they would like Deontay Thompson to pair with Ronnie, keep the chemistry going from Bama.
That too.
Who has range.
He does have range.
I like that a lot.
I realize we've gone really long on this Jaguars big board. We might have to cut our show down to two segments today and rush through the next one. When we come back, we're going to talk about a hypothetical trade scenario, because I know all of you guys love that, after these quick messages. Phil messaged me earlier this week with a trade idea scenario, and I'm going to let him run it through. We're going to talk about some of the prospects that will be left once the Jaguars are in this position and what we think of this trade as a whole. Phil, hit me with it.
Yeah, so basically, and this kind of pairs with what the conversation we were just having, is I think they have kind of a bank of a handful of guys that they consider elite. Right. And if one of those elite guys fall to them at 7, that they're going to stay put and take that guy. If one of those guys, kind of similar to remember the draft with Leonard Fournette and Jamal Adams, you know, they said they had 4 guys, right? 4 guys pegged for that pick. I think it'll be, I don't know exactly how many, but maybe 4 or 5 guys that they see would be worth taking at number 7. If those guys are not there, I think they would entertain a trade back and a trade down for me. The first time in Dave Caldwell's tenure here. So in thinking of scenarios to be able to do that, I kind of landed on the Atlanta Falcons picking at number 14. The reason it makes sense is a few things. Number one, the Falcons absolutely adore, cherish, love Ed Oliver. That's the guy they want. They have Grady Jarrett on a franchise tag right now. I don't think they want to pay him. If they got a guy like Ed Oliver, I think that would be the succession plan at 3 technique. He's ideal for their system. He'd work really well with Dan Quinn. I think with Doug Quinn, and I think that they would be a really good pairing on the inside. I think they covet him a lot. I think they would listen to offers to move up to number 7 to get in front of a team like the Bills, who also like him a lot. Sean McDermott went all the way to Houston's pro day to work out Ed Oliver. So it makes sense if they want to kind of leapfrog the Bills and make a trade there. And of course, the connection is Dave Caldwell and Thomas Dimitroff. Caldwell actually was working with the Falcons prior to taking the job with the Jaguars. So they have a good relationship. They're buddies, and it would be a really easy conversation for one of them. Just pick up the phone and talk about scenarios and what it would take to kind of move back into the draft.
So what do you think would be the immediate thought process for Jacksonville if they're sitting there at 14 and what they'd try to target?
Yeah, so I would basically go back to kind of the big board that we just talked about, right? And kind of think about their big board. And I think their thinking would be, okay, if we do really like a guy like Dwayne Haskins, right, we're still landing one pick before the Redskins and a couple picks before the Giants, who probably won't be taking that quarterback with number six, right?
Right.
So if Haskins quote-unquote slides, they can still potentially have a shot at him if Cincinnati doesn't take him at 11, to take him at 14. All of a sudden, you get a quality backup quarterback for $3.5 million average per year salary that DeFilippo can kind of develop. And it's just so funny, right? If I was bringing up this scenario of Haskins falling to 14 and us picking up potential future picks 2 months ago, people would have thought I belonged in Arkham Asylum, right? They'd be like a lunatic, right? And now all of a sudden, if they move down to 14 and he was still on the board and they were to pass, that seems even crazier to me. But regardless, if they want Haskins or they still want their tackle, right, or if they want one of those tight ends, then
Jonah and Fant are probably still there.
Right.
At least as things seem to appear.
I think there's a good chance Juwan Taylor could be there, as a matter of fact. I think there's a good chance of Brian Burns potentially being there, right? So there's still a good chance of a lot of those players that we kind of just had cropped together. It was funny how we agreed for the most part on the top, right, on the top of the board. And then once we got, you know, till like 6, 7, 8, 9, it was starting to get a little crazy and hairy, right? And that's exactly why I wanted to go through that exercise, because it kind of proves the point is that, you know, after that, it's kind of just a hodgepodge of guys and preference. And there's a good chance that they have guys graded similarly. And one of those guys would fall to them at 14, whether they want to take Haskins, whether they want to take a pass rusher like Brian Burns, whether they want to take either Jonah or Juwan. I think one of them would be there. And whether they wanted to take Hockenson or Noah Fant, I think one of them would be there, if that makes sense.
So I'm going to task our listeners with responding to this via Twitter after we post the pod. Would you rather take a trade to move down and select the talent that's being listed here, or sit at 7th overall and take
Juwan Taylor?
Juwan Taylor. And you might have said this already, I'm blanking. What would you assume our official, you know, what Jacksonville would receive back mm-hmm. in this trade would be?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Zach. So I had Kevin from Duval do some research for me, some R&D, and my R&D guy. Last year, Buffalo gave up the 12th pick, 53 and 56, to move up to 7 to get Josh Allen. Okay?
Right.
So that's two second rounders that they gave up. Now, I don't need all that. I would be totally fine with the Falcons parting with their second rounder, number 45, and I would take one of their two fourth round picks and one of their two fifth round picks for that move up. So essentially they would lose their second rounder, they would lose one of their two fourth rounders, lose one of their fifth rounders, but they'd be able to move up, still get maybe a generational defensive tackle in Ed Oliver, right? So the Jaguars would be essentially picking up another pick in the second round, and maybe two more picks. I would even take one. You know, I would take that fourth rounder alone. That's just me, you know. And picking up some extra picks that you could play around with or do something with. And then essentially, like, what I'm thinking is what that allows you to do, moving down to 14, say Dwayne Haskins is still there. You come away with a draft that looks like Dwayne Haskins at 14. And a lower salary. Keep that in mind too, right? I think that's important.
Right.
A guy like Caleb McGarry, right tackle, with a 38th pick, you can get your safety with that 45th pick, say Deontay Thompson, right? And then you could take a tight end like Foster Moreau. You could take your guy Chase Winovich with that other third round pick. A guy I like, Gary Jennings, in the fourth round. Another tight end that I really like, I spent a lot of time studying him last week. I liked him a lot more than I thought I would. Cahill Waring. He's a project, but I think he'd be a really fun guy to put and pair with John DeFilippo as a developmental tight end. He could turn into kind of a Dallas Goedert guy, and running back Tony Pollard, who's also a kick returner, and then a guy they like in Michael Dogbe at the end for defensive tackle. That's all of a sudden a pretty solid draft, right? So just kind of what I talked about before, envision that being able to move down to 14, still take a guy like Dwayne Haskins, and then be able to pick up a Deontay Thompson, basically, and a Cahale Waring as a developmental tight end, or Tommy Sweeney, whoever, right? Whatever tight end you like, Drew Sample. That if I floated that scenario to the fans, you know, a month or two ago, that they would take it in a heartbeat, right? If we put that on a poll, what did you say? Probably like 95% plus, maybe 90% plus would be like, yeah, sign me up for that today.
Right, of course.
So why would we change our mind 2 months? Like, Dwayne Haskins is the same player. He killed his pro day. He's got no off-field issues, right?
Can I make a totally different point on that before we wrap it up? And it's not about the trade as much, but it's about the defense talk at 7th. And I know I'm so washed up saying all this on repeat and on repeat, but I think the counter to it is why people would say no now is they're like, revolutionist history of the Jaguars, and it happens every year because they talk themselves into what the Jaguars are going to do, where people are like really starting to prioritize edge at 7th, almost to the point where they're like talking down on the idea of an offensive player when you're 4 months removed from the last time the Jaguars played. The last time the Jaguars played, I mean, their defense was still really good. Their offense looked like a Division II program. And just because they signed Cedric Ogbuehi and re-signed AJ Cann does not mean the offensive line is fixed. Just because they signed Jeff Swaim does not mean the tight end position is fixed. Just because they signed Nick Foles, you better believe that the position is fixed, but we don't have that proof just yet. That one's a bit drastic compared to these other ones, obviously, but there's a track record against Foles definitely being the guy. I will hold out hope for him given the money he was given. But Ogbuehi's probably a vet minimum guy. Swain is probably next to vet minimum. Chris Conley is making less than $2 million this year at receiver, which was an issue this past year, although there's some potential there. So, like, I get people want to buy in with the Foles factor, but I think trying to almost, like, you know, disassociate yourself with the idea of offense at 7 is buying in as a fan. And I don't mean this disrespectfully because I understand the hype to some of these prospects. But if we went back, you know, 2 months ago, even with at this point, we still had a pretty solid idea the Jaguars were going to go after Nick Foles. People were talking themselves all up on offense. So again, I don't understand where the change comes from. Do Jeff Swaim and Cedric Ogbuehi and Chris Conley really move that needle? I don't think so.
Rant noted.
Keep that in mind. That's just how I feel on it, because I know it's a little bit different drafting 29th and 7th, but we all wanted Will Hernandez. Well, I mean, I'm willing to say most people wanted Will Hernandez at pick 29, or even Lamar Jackson for what it's worth, and they took Taven Bryan. The immediate thought was honestly a bit of outrage that they didn't go and upgrade the offense, which was still clearly the issue going into the 2018 season in comparison to the defense. Then camp came around, he made a couple of impressive plays in one-on-ones, and Calais Campbell was raving about him, and suddenly everyone loved the Taven pick and understood the logic, and even I understood the logic a bit with the plan with Malik Jackson or Calais or whatever they were going to do at that point. By October, through now, still now, people are still trashing it. People hate the Taven Bryan pick because of the offensive upgrade that was there. Is guard a premium position? Is Lamar Jackson a sure thing as an NFL quarterback? No. But whereas hindsight's 2020, this is also kind of a 2020 thing when we were sitting there at about 10:30 at night waiting for the Jaguars to pick 29th. And I still have that vision about what they could do at 7th overall in comparison to drafting a defensive player when you're not getting the home run Quinnen Williams or Nick Bosa, unless, you know, everything crumbles and those guys fall. But this is just my opinion, just my 2 cents. Anyway.
Well, friends, let's hope that Quinnen Williams or Montez Sweat or Josh Allen falls to 7 so we can see Zach blow his gasket.
Well, Montez is, I guess, probably the only one not named William or Bosa, but I still don't think I'd love the idea of pretty much anyone else. While I like them as prospects, you know this, you know my thoughts on this. We talk every day.
Right. And I think that's what it goes back to is like even you've conceded those three guys, right, seem to be elite guys, right, potentially generational guys. So if those one of those guys fell to number seven, I think that's the argument you make for them taking that player. I think if the guys are off the board that they have, you know, ranked in that crop of elite blue chip guys, then I think the conversation gets to be a lot muddier. And it gets really interesting, and that's what's going to make this draft fun because, as you know, depending on who they take in that first round is going to affect everything else like a domino for the rest of the draft. If they take an offensive tackle in the first round, then all of a sudden, you know, who are they going to take in that second round when there's going to be a good clump of right tackles available to, you know, to take? Are they going to take a free safety there? We'll see. It's going to depend on who falls, of course, and who's available and all that stuff. Will they trade back up for a guy like Dwayne Haskins, who is quote unquote falling, which I do not buy for a second. That's what makes this fun.
It definitely does make it fun, and I'm excited for it. We went a little long today. We're going to have to wrap it up now. Glad you guys have listened to my ranting. And I want to hear it on Twitter. What do you prefer, sticking at seven with Jawan Taylor or the trade back with Atlanta and taking whoever you freaking want of the players that Philip listed? Phil, great to have you on the show as always, and I'm sure we'll do this next week.
You got it. Next week, big week.
Yeah, it is a big week. I've got a big announcement coming on Monday. If you guys didn't see that on Twitter, something big's happening with me. Make sure to stick around. You'll see that then, no hints. Until then, I mean, subscribe to Locked On Jaguars. Anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find us, and we'll catch up with you next time.